This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Rise above and be in control with today's business headlines, driven by Volvo Cars.
7:48 right now, you're listening to The Morning Run. Melissa and Han here with you as we bring you the top business stories of the day. But in about 15 minutes or so, we have the Breakfast Grill. And today we're going to be looking at the Grand Prix, because Mark Gallagher, the Grand Prix motor racing boss, will be on the show. Han, you're a bit of a motorhead. You tell us, what are you going to be talking about?
Actually, not so much. I'm not so much a motorhead.
I used
to be, because it was part of my job. I had to cover F1, but you know, we hardly cover F1.
Oh, you really told me. I thought you were a huge racing fan.
Fake it till you make it. Yeah, that's right. Okay, look, so the F1 calendar is set to get longer. There are about 2021 races now, right, with the final race being this weekend. But then by, you know, say 2020, there are some hopes of making it to 25 races. Vietnam is set to get included onto the calendar, perhaps the city of Miami, Florida, and also the Netherlands as well, right? So the question is, you know, with this waning popularity of Formula One, is adding more races the solution to the problem?
Oh, is it waning? Popularity, is that on the decline?
So I'll give you an example. TV viewership over the past decade has fallen by 40%.
Oh.
So it's about, you know,
why?
Half.
Why is that? What do you reckon?
Well, we'll try and find out from Mark Gallagher.
I should be listening. I want to listen to find out why this there's been a decline in this the popularity of the sport.
Yeah, but then just keep in mind that this interview was recorded previously. This was before it was announced that Vietnam will host their F1 race. Also before Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes won their fifth consecutive double world titles. We've had the same winner in F1 since 2014. It's getting so predictable. It's getting so boring. We're going to talk about how that feeds into the waning popularity of the sports, and of course the economics of hosting such events. Because, you know, here in Malaysia, we stopped hosting F1 races at Sepang.
Alright, more on that on the Breakfast Grill coming up in about 15 minutes or so. Alright, let's turn our attention to, of course, the biggest story of the day has got to be coming off that interview that the former Prime Minister did with Sina Harian, where he admitted to being duped. That's how NST is framing that story. But he admitted that Jolo may have lied. So now we're also looking at a New York Times article. So the New York Times yesterday reported that Lloyd Blankfein, which is the former CEO of Goldman Sachs, he had personally met with Jolo at the Goldman Sachs headquarters. And this was back in December 2012.
Right. And actually, there's a Bloomberg story out from earlier this month also talking about a 2009 meeting between Blankfein and Jolo, right? So there may have been multiple meetings here based on, you know, what New York Times and Bloomberg is reporting.
Yeah, but right now, so in response to this this article, so a Goldman spokesperson has reported to have said, look, the meeting was with Mohammed Ahmed Badawi, the CEO of ABBA, and it was an introductory meeting with him as ABBA was an existing client. And Jolo was apparently there at ABBA's request. So in a way, I think they're trying to distance themselves.
Yeah, so just setting a timeline. So there was a possible 2009 meeting, 2012, and also one in 2013. So there were several times. In other words, you know, this deal, these 1MDB deals went all the way to the top.
I have to say, though, that 2013 meeting, I think some people at Goldman dispute that Jolo had met then. So that's still up in the air.
But still, you know, we're getting more details now. And this was one of the key themes that you explored in your Breakfast Grill, right, Melissa, with Tom Wright. He was talking about, well, the question now is, how much did Goldman know of these deals? And since that Breakfast Grill, we now have all these reports.
Well, so I think this is important for a couple of reasons, right? And you're precisely right. So how much did Goldman know about this deal, about what Jolo was allegedly doing? So I think what this now represents is that the scope of this scandal for Goldman, it's expanding.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that federal prosecutors in the US are now examining this 2012 meeting, this 2009 meeting, 2012 meeting, and allegedly the 2013 meeting, means that the Goldman can no longer, claim what they've been claiming so far, that this had been the actions of a few rogue employees within the bank. Right. If it goes all the way to the top, then how can they deny culpability? Which is also the question I'd ask the former finance minister slash former prime minister. If it goes all the way to the top, how can you deny culpability?
Right. And so it went all the way to the top on, you know, even with these warnings allegedly coming from within the bank, right? So Goldman's compliance staff had reportedly rejected Lowe's attempts to be their client since 2009, yet those meetings still went on, right? And we know that Tim Leisner has blamed this culture of secrecy that kind of aided these ill-advised deals, at least on the part of Malaysians. It was certainly ill-advised, right? So again, no, where do they draw the line when it comes to who's ultimately responsible within the Goldman ranks?
Yeah, so as we were speaking a bit earlier about how Najib had admitted that Joe Lowe had cheated the government, I just want to mention a couple of tweets here. A funny one from Iza Yusuf, who said, "Hey, can I request a song? Can you play It Wasn't Me by Shaggy?" And he wants to dedicate that to our ex-prime minister. Also, we have a tweet from Sheikh Sharir, who is asking, "Hey, Najib has given interviews to Al Jazeera and Sinaharia. Maybe it's time that you guys invite him to the breakfast grill and he can answer all the questions himself." I'd like to reassure you, Sheikh Sharir, that we are working on that.
Well, we just got to make sure it doesn't walk out, right?
Oh, yes. Or just talk about the economy. All right. The other thing that we're also looking at is news that Malaysia is not expected to follow the follow IPIC's move to file civil proceedings against Goldman Sachs. So we spoke about that a little bit. I think it was yesterday that IPIC is planning to move or to file the civil suit against Goldman. And Malaysia now saying, well, we're not going to follow suit. We're not going. We're already battling IPIC in a London court. So we'll leave it at that.
All right. So this is on the front page of today's Malaysian Reserve. Then they are quoting an unnamed government source. So Malaysia sues IPIC, IPIC suing Goldman.
And shouldn't we also sue Goldman? Why not? Why won't we sue Goldman? So P. Gunasegaram, who is a regular on Pressing Matters, also an independent business analyst, author of the 1MDB scandal that brought down the government. That's the title of his book. In an op-ed in Malaysia Kini, Aguna wrote that Malaysia can take criminal action against Goldman Sachs, and particularly if that criminal action is established against Goldman for the criminal activities against 1MDB, that would then pave the way for the civil action and the return of not just the $600 million, but also that greater claim of $2.7 billion, which is the amount of money that the DOJ is saying was stolen from Malaysia.
Right. Recall that press conference by the DOJ. You know, they said ultimately who is the victim in this case? It is the Malaysian people. So we should get that money back. But going back to that op-ed by Guna, you know, he's saying that if criminal action is shown on the part of those Goldman officials, you know, then it will follow that the bank's top management should have reasonably known that there's something about this deal as well, right? So, I mean, again, especially given the incredibly high fees that were being placed onto these deals, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this was right after the financial crisis. They're not making money, but they see this tiny little Southeast Asian country giving them a whole lot of money. You don't ask why.
Well, we're going to see the fall in Goldman's share price in the recent days, weeks as well, has been, I think, impacting investor confidence in this bank. But I also want to bring another story to our attention this morning, is the fact that the leadership overhaul, which, you know, we saw sweep corporate Malaysia not too long ago, looks to be still in the works. At least two CEOs are rumored to be leaving their respective organizations in the near future. Who are they? RHB Managing Director Datuk Khairul Saleh Ramli and CIMB Group CEO Tengku Datuk Sri Zafrul Aziz rumoured to be leaving their positions, according to Starbiz.
Right, so a sequel to the shake-up, a shake-up sequel perhaps, 2.0.
Part two.
Yeah, part two.
Look, remix.
Remix. So looking at what's been going on with some of these banks, look, CIMB, they already saw Datuk Sri Nazir leaving his role as CIMB's chairman back in September. there. Then over there at RHB, Omar Siddiq, was moved as head of group wholesale banking to CIMB as group COO. So there were some changes over there. Of course, if you look back over the last few months since May 9th, there have been a slew of changes at GLCs and GLICs. So everything from Dato' Wan Kamaruzaman leaving Kuap, Telecoms acting group CEO resigned last Friday. Of course, Tan Sri Lodin being replaced at LTAT. Abdul Wahid Omar, big name. Yeah. Muhammad Ibrahim. The list goes on and on.
So the names that you've listed, Han, some of these are really good CEOs. They did well at their jobs. So I don't know whether, you know, we're going to have, this is again, I feel like it's a remix, right? Part two. We're going to have that conversation once again of whether it was purely based on the KPIs, based on their performance, and whether their leaving had to do with bigger considerations,
right,
pressures.
Right. So, you know, what we've been hearing from the government is that there is this, or at least based on analysis, right, there is this trust deficit between the government of the day and some of those in the leadership of these GLCs. But we don't know any better, right? Mm. Are they specific as to why Muhammad Ibrahim actually had to vacate the BNM post? Why Azman Mokhtar had to leave Khazanah?
Do you think it would help with the perception if it was made more transparent as
of
to
course.
Why, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's according to Starbase, not just these two men that we talked about, CIMB and RHB, not just Khairul Saleh and Tengku Zafrul, but also, according to Starbase, some CEOs at smaller financial institutions and property firms that are owned by GLCs, apparently these CEOs also likely to be departing from their roles.
Right. No, and we also know that from a fiscal perspective, the current government is seen to be more reliant on dividends from GLCs and GLICs. So I understand, fine, you need people who will play ball with you.
Well, apparently, according to the source that the Star spoke to, it's the overhaul, the change of the old guard.
Right. You know, yeah. So I get that. But again, if they are saying that's the whole CAT thing, you know, competency, accountability, and transparency, well, then, you know, tell us exactly why all these individuals are being either removed or being forced to step aside from their positions.
Yeah, and I think, you know, BFM or The Morning Run, as hopefully the voice that speaks for the business community, I think let's address this disquiet that has indeed grown after May 9th among the corporate sector about this so-called purge, right? So that, I think we're going to keep a very close eye on this GLC shakeup 2.0. But let's turn our attention to cars. Proton plans to introduce a new car model which is equipped with a 1,500cc turbocharged engine in the near future. So the head of engineering at Proton said that this is in line with the current global trend of car makers turning to turbocharged engines as opposed to naturally aspirated engines. I don't know what that means.
What
is naturally aspirated engines?
No idea. You gotta ask Proton. But I do like the fact that it's 1.5, so that means I believe those who buy this car then can qualify for those fuel subsidies, right?
Because that's a good point.
1.5. But anyways, so there's this new car model. On top of that, there's the highly anticipated X70. That's Proton's first ever SUV. So they revealed it at the recent KL International Motor Show.
I think what this represents really is the wider picture, right? What we want to see is Proton getting back on track, right? So yes, turbocharged engines, naturally aspirated engines. The idea is, you know, Proton's got this X70 in the line, in the works. Now they're looking at moving into more models, right? So could we be seeing this as the turn of the tide for Proton? Are they going to be releasing new models? And how well do you reckon these models will be taken up? According to the X7 at the moment, they've already gotten about 10,000 bookings already.
X70,
even before the launch on next month, in a few weeks' time.
Right, no, we have seen the good work that Geely has done with Volvo, right? You know, letting them do their thing and letting them innovate themselves, even though they are a major shareholder there. So, you know, hopefully those kind of fortunes that Volvo has seen, Proton can emulate as well and ultimately become internationally competitive.
This is why I love our listeners.
What?
Victor Lowe has WhatsApped in to say it's cars with carburetors. That's what it means.
Okay.
Don't all cars have carburetors?
I'm going to try and Google what a carburetor is right now. We're totally showing our neck off.
We're not motorheads, right? Okay. All right. Well, let's then juxtapose Proton's performance with Produa's performance, because at present, at the recent car motor show, Produa had released or teased teased a new mystery model, which they are referring to as the new sport utility car. So they're saying that this is the upcoming SUV, codenamed D38L.
All right, so this confirms rumors that, because even during my breakfast grill with Porodua many moons ago, I actually addressed this with Porodua, you know, asking, well, you know, will you guys have an SUV and how will it be priced? So now there's this new mystery model as a new sport utility mobile. So yeah, looks like those rumors are indeed true.
So do you think this could go head-to-head with Proton's X70?
Yeah, you know, because globally speaking, there is this shift away from sedans to your SUVs. You know, that's certainly being driven over there in the States. So it looks like that flavor or that trend is permeating Asian markets as well. Now, the question is, you know, whether or not Malaysians love SUVs enough? Well, Mel, you've got an SUV, right? Yeah, there we go. So you are proof of that trend taking
I do, but I still don't know what a turbocharged engine
Or a carburetor.
Paul Ganesh on WhatsApp says we should get the cruise control boys to help us understand.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to check in with them after this. Before we take a look at the opening numbers from Bursa Malaysia, I also want to say that a naturally aspirated engine gets its air intake solely from its atmospheric pressure, while a turbocharger or a supercharger has an element of forced induction. Top marks to our top producer team behind the scenes.
I still have no idea what that means.
We've got the opening numbers from Bursa Malaysia. Keith, come next. BFM 89.9.
Keeping you on track for peak business performance with the new Volvo XC40, the expression of innovation. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.